Good Friday afternoon to you. I'm Andy Klein, your host of A Juno Afternoon today. And we've got a really fun show today where we're going to be talking about getting ready for Alexander Tutunov, the upcoming concert and master classes. Kerry Robinson and Judith Mitchell are here to talk to us about that. Matt Robus and Jerry Burnett from the Territorial Sportsman are going to be talking to us about the Golden North Salmon Derby. Food Truck Friday is this Friday. It's happening in just about an hour or so, and the Flustered Cluckers are here. Greg Millard is the pianist with the band, and they're going to be playing at 5:30 tonight. And then the Southeast Alaska Land Trust wants to talk about a 5K run that's happening August 5th, and Allison Gillum and Amanda Pilley will be here to talk about that. We've got that and a lot more coming up right after National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Nearly 2 weeks ago, a city worker in Riverton, Wyoming, was arrested for murder and attempted murder after two Native American men were shot inside an alcohol detoxification center. Northern Arapaho leaders are calling on the Department of Justice for the attack to be prosecuted as a federal hate crime. Wyoming Public Radio's Aaron Schrank has more.
29-year-old Stallone Trosper died in the attack. 50-year-old James Goggles Jr. is hospitalized and recovering from his injuries. Both victims are enrolled members of the Northern Arapaho Tribe, one of two Indian nations sharing Wyoming's Wind River Reservation. According to an arrest affidavit, the suspect, Roy Clyde, confessed to the attack and told police he was targeting homeless people, regardless of race. Tribal officials and the victims' families don't buy that explanation. Trosper's uncle, George Abeda, says his nephew was not experiencing homelessness and wants to see Clyde charged with a hate crime.
We're still true to the cause in making sure that justice is served on behalf of my nephew, Stallone. So let the truth be told. If it's a duck, let's call it a duck. If that's a hate crime, it was a hate crime. If he was looking for a homeless person, I don't think he looked for large backpacks or shopping carts. He was not looking for the homeless. He was looking for Native.
On Wednesday, the Northern Arapaho Business Council met with the Civil Rights Division at the Department of Justice. Councilman Ronald Oldman says the talks were productive.
We traveled hundreds of miles to Washington to voice our concerns of our tribal members and our families. They listened to our experiences of racism and discussed the shootings with us. We're thankful that the senior officials in the Justice Department Civil Rights Division committed to taking a hard look at this senseless incident.
Wyoming does not have a separate law that gives harsher sentences for hate crimes, which is why the tribe went to the feds. Riverton police say they would welcome a federal hate crime investigation. I'm Aaron Schrank in Riverton.
A Lakota farmer is fighting for the right to plant a new crop of industrial hemp on the Pine Ridge Reservation in South Dakota. Alex Whiteplume began growing hemp in the late 1990s after the Oglala Sioux tribe legalized the crop for industrial use. But drug enforcement agents soon seized the crop. He spent several years fighting in federal court and is restricted to plant again despite new provisions in the farm bill that open the door for the crop. Charles Michael Ray reports.
Round one of this fight occurred over a decade ago. That's when Alex Whiteplume lost his bid to grow industrial hemp on Pine Ridge. But in round two, Whiteplume has a new ally in his corner, attorney Tim Purdon, who's filing a motion to lift the 11-year-old federal injunction.
You know, I have a lot of respect for the lawyers at the Department of Justice. As a former U.S. attorney, I love the department, but they're just wrong when it comes to the tribal sovereignty piece here.
Purdon was most recently U.S. attorney for North Dakota. He's now working pro bono on the side of Whiteplume. Like the Oglala Sioux tribe, North Dakota also legalized hemp, and years ago, Purdon fought for the right to see it grown there. Purdon says this case is in part about tribal sovereignty, but he adds it's also about Whiteplume's rights. Purdon says Congress legalized industrial hemp in the last farm bill, and he says the injunction that restricts Alex Whiteplume from even applying for a permit is unfair.
Here you have a resident of the Pine Ridge Reservation who wants to grow non-drug, non-psychotropic industrial hemp and perhaps start an industrial hemp industry in one of the poorest counties in America. And this injunction, in light of these current circumstances, just seems crazy to me.
Officials with the U.S. Attorney's Office in South Dakota say they have no comment. The Obama administration is holding back on enforcing marijuana laws in states or tribes that legalize hemp. That's a policy that could change with a new president after 2016. But Tim Purdon says the industrial hemp provision in the Farm Bill will stand regardless. I'm Charles Michael Ray in Rapid City, South Dakota.
And I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation, and by the law firm of Sanosky, Chambers, Saxby, Miller & Munson, advocating Native American interests throughout the United States, with offices in New Mexico, California, Alaska, and Washington, D.C.
Support by Humboldt State University's part-time online Master of Social Work. The 3.5-year program focuses on decolonizing work with rural and indigenous communities. Applications accepted August 1st to 31st for a January start at humboldt.edu/socialwork.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
That is the beautiful sound of none other than Dr. Alexander Tutanov playing Tchaikovsky. And Dr. Tutanov will be here in town and playing and doing seminars, and that is very exciting. And Carrie Robinson and Judith Mitchell are here to talk to us about it. Welcome to both of you. Thanks for coming in.
Great. Thank you so
Somebody
much.
Somebody say something.
Great. Well, we are...
I swear they're here in the studio right now.
We are glad to be here.
Okay.
We are. Yeah. Thank you so much. We are so thrilled that Dr. Tutanov is going to be here in Juneau. He is arriving next Wednesday, and he's going to be doing a concert. It's going to include the works of Bach, Schubert, Chopin, Medtner, Prokofiev, just to name a few.
Mm-hmm.
And that concert starts at 7 p.m., all the events are going to be at Northern Light United Church. He's also going to do private lessons, and he's going to do a master class, which is going to be on Saturday. It's a 3-hour master class from 9 to noon, and the cost is only $30.
So tell me a little bit about his background. This seems like this is real. Is this guy's kind of a rock star of classical musicians in a way, right? I mean,
he is.
Yeah.
we have been so fortunate in Juneau to have him come here for many years. And I'll let Judith talk a little bit about his bio.
Sure. He really maintains a busy performing schedule. He goes to Europe, China, Mexico. In fact, he's just coming back from a tour in France and in Washington, D.C. He does, he lives in Ashland, and he's professor of piano and artist in residence at Southern Oregon University. So he really works a lot. He's been doing classes in Juneau, well, I know at least back to 2007. He was working at UAS. He would come up 4 times a year. We'd have master classes for a number of years. I didn't even have enough energy in order to be able to go in and actually play for him. But he's a really kind teacher. He does classes now using Skype.
Oh,
and
wow.
So
that's
you can still get lessons from him all the way in Oregon.
Telecommuting music. That's great. Yeah, that's amazing.
It's amazing, yeah.
So does he have a – would you say – are you both pianists?
No.
You are. I know that you are, Judith. And then are you a musician?
I am the mom of a young musician.
Oh, I see. All
yes.
right. So
who's been taking classes
you're musician by association.
Yeah.
Okay.
And Kyle's been working with Dr. Tutanov for a number of years now.
Yeah. So my son Kyle is a piano player, and he started taking lessons at age 10 through a university class. And now he's 14. And, yeah, he's still working with Dr. Tutanov and is very serious about piano.
Would you say that Dr. Tutanov has a specific specialty of things that he plays or of ways that he teaches or things that he teaches?
Well, his background is decidedly Russian.
Okay, sure.
So he came out of Belarus. He won first prize in the former Soviet Union. So he has a real feel for Russian music, hence the Prokofiev and a lot of Rachmaninoff. So I think that's really good. He was just at a seminar talking about sight reading. So he has a really broad background. He's very active in Oregon along with the music scene down there.
Does he have, how would you describe his teaching style?
Oh, he is very supportive. One thing that he can do, however,
because there can be those two different types of teachers, right? And especially, you know, when it comes to arts or music, there's ones that are really like the rote and drill. And I'm sure that's an important part of it. You have to practice, right?
It is true. He is really good at tone. But one thing he can do, which is just amazing, classical music has a lot of notes. And yet he can pick out a wrong note in the middle of hundreds of notes, and all of a sudden he'll just stop you and say, wasn't that a B-flat? And you're just trying to figure out how he can keep all of that.
But you're recovering that
yes,
one, right?
That's right. Yeah, right. That's exactly right. But no, he is very good at that, but extremely supportive. And especially for people like me who just do it in our spare time, and I was quite reticent to try to go out and actually perform, he's just a great teacher to be able to support the students. He works a lot with younger students, and he's very active in the college scene in Oregon.
How's your son like working with him?
Oh, he loves it.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Feels like a treat when he comes to town and that sort of thing, or?
Oh my gosh, yes. He's been looking forward to it for a while now, and we're also planning to take him salmon fishing, so he's also coming to Juneau for
nice.
All the fun activities that we have to offer.
Sure, yeah. So what do you hope that people get out of the interaction that they have with Tutanoff when he comes to town?
One thing I'd suggest is that the master class is really entertaining. Whether you play or you don't have to play to come to the master class. It's very great to sit back, listen to him work with the pianists. He talks about the composers. He talks about the music. You get a lot of background about the songs and the music, and you can just kind of take it in. And so, as I mentioned, a number of years I just sat and listened because it's just really fascinating.
It's interesting, isn't it? I mean, when the interpretations of classical music can be so much about history and about intent of the composer and about those things, and then it can also be how any musician wants to take that and run with it in their own way. Would you say that he has a type of style that's either maybe more tied to, you know, the classic way of doing it, or is he more, I mean, how would you describe that? And I don't even know if I'm using the right terms, you know but
it's very interesting. I'm not professionally trained in music, and so I'm not sure I'm using the right words either, but one thing that he does is that he really can bring both new ideas and the traditional. He's very schooled in the Russian way of playing, the way you relax, the way you attack the piano, etc. And yet he is very open to things like the internet, a lot of study. He has a lot of resources available and a lot of other musicians that he's tied into. And so he's very open to all different types of experimentation. Mm-hmm. I think he's across the board, but an altogether very humble, very sweet person.
And he's actually going to be on the air here on K2 next Wednesday, right?
Yes.
Which is an exciting little treat that we're going to get to be able to hear him and talk to him, and maybe he'll discuss some of his music and some of his style and that sort of thing as well. So stay tuned for that, folks at home listening. And is there anything else you want to talk about here? We've got these. So just so people understand, there's kind of two separate things going on, right? There's the classes, and then there's the concert.
Right. And then there's also going to be a student recital on Sunday for those people who participate in the master class. And I want to thank Threshold Music for helping us advertise the events. You can go to www.threshold.org if you want to sign up for any of the events in advance. But you can also get tickets at the door. And I would just say we are so excited to have him here in Juneau again. He's very much a part of this community, and we're thrilled.
Yeah, it's a wonderful thing. It's going to be exciting. I'm sure all musicians, especially classical musicians in town, are sort of at the edge of their seat waiting for this to happen, right? It can sort of a big, I'm sure it's a big week for folks that are in this.
It's a big week, and Juneau's such a musical town, so this is great.
All right, well, thanks so much to both of you coming in. That's Dr. Alexander Tudinov. The piano immersion class is starting August 5th through the 9th, and you can sign up for the master classes, as you were just saying, through thrushhill.org. That's thrushhill.org. And you can get also private lessons and master classes. And then he's going to be in concert the opening night on August 5th at 7 p.m. And where's that concert being held? Is that at Northern Lights Church?
Yes.
Okay.
All the events are at Northern Light.
Okay. And then the private lessons are available the 6th to the 8th. And then the master class is happening Saturday on the 8th from 9 to noon. And as you were saying, people can just go and actually observe the master class too. And just that sounds amazing.
Right.
To go do that, listen to people and the learning process, and then these people who can be very, very skilled musicians doing amazing work.
And
that sounds very
cool.
And a
student recital Sunday, 3 p.m.
Okay, sounds great. Well, thanks to both of you for coming in, and we'll listen to a little bit more of this music of Alexander Tudinov playing Tchaikovsky. And thanks so much for coming in to you both, Judith and Carrie. Thanks.
Thank you.
Welcome back to Juneau Afternoon. Rest of the day, rain. I hate to even say it, but that's what's going to be going on here. That's the prediction anyway. Co-chairs of the Golden North Salmon Derby have joined me next. Matt Robus and Jerry Burnett. Thanks to both of you for coming in.
Thank you.
And boy, exciting, cool, fun event that everyone looks forward to every year. The Golden North Salmon Derby. What year is this running?
This is the 69th year. Ever since World War II. Every year.
Right?
So,
do you know what started it? What was the thing that was the impetus to it starting in that those many years ago?
At least within the first few years, it was decided to put together a scholarship fund, and a foundation was created. And so since 1953, I believe, almost $1.7 million of scholarships have been awarded.
That's an amazing number.
This is the fundraiser to provide the money into that foundation.
Sure, and I've known kids for years and years and years that have taken advantage of that and gone off and done amazing things, right?
And some of those are back now in Juneau doing amazing things as adults. We have a three-generation family, I think, that have all had Derby-winning scholarships.
Is that right?
And that's a,
yeah.
It's a big deal.
Tell me a little bit about the actual Derby itself. When does it start, and what are some of the prizes and all that cool stuff?
Well, the dates this year are Friday, August 14th through the weekend, ending the end of Sunday, the 16th. We've got a variety of prizes. The top 69 fish in terms of weight that are turned in all receive prizes. And then we also have some special prizes that have been given us by sponsors for, you know, the largest fish turned in by a person under 12 or so, you know, something like that. And we also have two separate high five drawings this year, which for the first time in a few years actually allows somebody who doesn't fish to have a chance at up to $50,000 in a
drawing. So how does that work? What's a high five drawing?
Well, high five drawing, you're the winner and you get to choose. We have a number of envelopes, and I forget how many, but in each envelope has a dollar amount written in it, and you can win between $500 and $50,000 by the first five envelopes that you choose that match.
Oh, I see. Okay.
So that's choose like envelopes until you match five. And
so there's fewer $50,000 envelopes.
Yeah, than there are, I would think. That would be the smart thing to do.
But several, a few years ago, we had someone win the $50,000.
Wow,
so
yeah.
It has happened here.
And do you get, are there also a couple of tagfish out there that are like the special fish? Or
this year we do not have a tagfish program.
So instead we've got 69 of the heaviest fish. I mean, that's like, you got to enter this, right? I mean, you're gonna win something.
Yeah, the first prize is $10,000 plus some bling, and the 69th prize is worth about $3,600, I think. So,
right.
Is that right?
The prizes in between are vary.
Yeah,
you know,
sure. But wow.
I forgot to mention one other kind of prize, and that's the scholarship fish prizes. So that in addition to the top heavy fish, if you catch cohos and keep them in good condition and want to turn them in, those are sold to make the proceeds that go into the scholarship fund and into territorial sportsmen. So there are a series of scholarship fish prizes, too, where we do daily cash drawings and things like that. So there's reward for anybody in addition to being able to go out for the weekend and catch fish.
Now, is there a limitation about where people can go to fish and things like that, or how does that all work out?
Yeah, there's a map on our website at GoldenNorthSalmonDerby.com, and there'll be one in the brochure that's in the newspaper. But down south of here, it's clearly marked. It's down past by Taku Harbor, I don't know exactly where, out to Point Coverton, north, a line across from Little Island, I believe.
Okay.
So it's clearly marked on the map and delineated.
Well, let's talk a little bit about the money that is raised for Gordon North. We talked about scholarships, but tell me a little bit about how people apply for those scholarships, where that money has gone and what it's been used for.
In the second semester of every school year, a committee from the Scholarship Foundation, which also includes a couple of directors from the Territorial Sportsmen Incorporated, they meet and review applications from high school students here in town, and then do interviews and select, depending on the health of the fund and how investments are going and so forth, it can be anything from three scholarships per year up to, I think we've done as many as six one year. Those can either be for a four-year school, or there can be a, quote, kind of vocational, special, you know, some other kind of educational opportunity that can be awarded. And those vocational ones, by the way, can be awarded to anybody in Southeast Alaska, and they can be applied for at any time of the year. This year we awarded three $12,000 annual scholarships here in Juneau to high school students going to four-year schools. Those are renewable every year as long as they maintain a certain GPA and write a little report about how they're doing back to the foundation every year. So over 4 years, that adds up to a fair amount of help.
I kind of didn't quite realize it was that level of a dollar amount, that it was $12,000. I guess I don't know what I assumed, that it was less, but boy, that is an incredibly significant amount of money.
Right, and it's paid out, you know, as long as you're working through school and getting your grades. It's $2,000 the first year, $2,000 the second year, and then $4,000 and $4,000.
I see, yeah. Right.
So it's a significant part of
helps. It really helps people get that schooling, and like you say, or vocational schools, which is such a vital and important part of the educational process as well. So how do people go about getting tickets?
Well, tickets this year will be sold at Harry's Plumbing downtown, at Western Auto, at DeHart's, and at Juneau Mercantile and Armory near the airport, and they'll be on sale on Monday. And those ticket vendors have the tickets, so they'll be ready to go.
And then, as you were saying, that you have a web address, people can find out more information, but it's a little bit different than if they've looked in last year, so just let's make sure people know the right web address.
Right, thanks. This is pretty important to us. It's a long story. We do not have the same website domain as we had last year, so we've had to change our address, and it is now goldennorthsalmonderby.com. The problem is that a computer that's not forced to go to that may go to an old site that's .org, and that does not have current information on it, and we don't have access to it anymore.
Oh, I see.
So people really need to pay attention to go to the .com address. We have that up and running. All the prizes are shown there, and we will be posting fish weights and the various ticket numbers that are drawn for prizes and so forth. But go to .com.
Okay.
Yeah, and also we put up a Facebook page this year, so if you like us on Facebook, you can get updates, and you will be able to go from the Facebook page link to the correct.
Well, that's cool. Social media and people, I'm sure, posting pictures of their catch and all that kind of stuff.
We encourage people to post pictures of their catch on our Facebook page.
What's the biggest, typically the size of a catch that wins, or what's the biggest, or what are some of the sizes?
Well, I think the biggest one in history was back in the 70s, and it was a 59-pound fish.
It's a good size fish.
You know, sometimes they're in the mid and high 20s, and sometimes they're in the 30s and 40s and even the 50s, but more recently, most of them have been in the 20s and the low 30s.
Yeah, right. And so how does the whole award ceremony happen? When does that happen? And you know, if people haven't even been in the Derby, they still want to go see the award ceremony, so I'm sure it's a lot of fun.
Right. So we certify the results of the Derby on the Tuesday following, so that's going to be the 18th. All the results will be posted by the 19th on the website, and then the evening of Thursday, the 20th, is the award ceremony. And all the various different types of prizes are given out. People need to bring their Derby tickets and their weigh-in tickets to be awarded a prize. That's very important. It's kind of terrible to be sitting there knowing you could have one and you don't have the tickets.
And also the scholarship tickets, if you found that your number was drawn as a winner, you need to come and bring those and get your cash.
Right. And where does that take place, the award ceremony? Where does that happen?
It's going to be at Centennial.
At Centennial. And then is there a place for the day of, you know, August 14th that everyone gathers and gets together? And where do the weigh-ins happen and all that stuff?
There's three weigh-in locations. It's Douglas Harbor, Statter Harbor at Auk Bay, and Imalga Harbor. There are a couple of other places where you can get your Derby ticket validated to show that you can go out on the fishing grounds, and T Harbor is one of those. You recall the other one offhand?
Well, Fisherman's Band.
Right.
At Auk Bay, mm-hmm. as well as, and I think Harris and at Aurora.
Downtown
at Aurora. Oh,
right. Okay.
But for weighing, only those first three, which would be Douglas Harbor, Statter Harbor, Imalga Harbor, are official weigh-in stations, and that's where you get the weigh tickets that could win you a prize later on.
Then if you have just a scholarship fish that you're not going to weigh, you can turn it in at the Packer that will be at somewhere along Shelter Island.
Very cool. Well, it's happening August 14th. Do people need to make sure they sign up early, or can they? How does that all work? Like, I'm sure the earlier the better, right?
Well, in our opinion, it would be better. The vendors have the tickets ready for sale beginning Monday. We will have the newspaper supplement that's being printed this weekend will be at the vendors on Monday for people to pick up when they buy tickets. That's got all the details in it.
Yeah.
And then next Wednesday, the newspaper supplement will be out, so a wider public can see the rules and all of the prize lists and so forth. But, buy tickets early and often.
Yeah, that's right.
Support the scholarship
and
fund.
And, of course, it's the territorial sportsmen that have kind of organized this and put it on, and you guys are the co-chairs. But I'm sure you have a lot of sponsors that are helping you out as well. Do you want to mention a few of those just to get this all done?
We have a long list of sponsors, and it's very broad. And at the risk of not naming somebody important, I just want to mention a couple that have just been especially generous to us. Bobcat of Juneau this year has donated two forklifts for our ice operations at the harbors. That's more than we went to them asking, and it turned out we unexpectedly needed another one, and they came up with one, and we really appreciate it. The high fives, the ticket holder high five, where you can win up to $50,000 just by getting a ticket, is sponsored by RE/MAX of Juneau. We really appreciate that. And then the other high five for scholarship fish is sponsored by Hecla Greens Creek Mine and Coeur Kensington Mine in combination. And then finally, Alaska Glacier Seafood, Mike Erickson and his group are just so generous to us in terms of providing ice and buying the fish and having the packer out on the grounds and just really, really making the implementation of the Derby so much easier for us, and we appreciate that a lot.
That's great. I mean, it's such a community event. It's an event mm-hmm. that people look forward to every year, and good luck with it this year. It's going to be a great one, I'm sure. The cohos are out there jumping already. You can see them, you know. It's already happening.
Just need to get them into the boat.
Just got to get them in the boat by hook. And thanks so much for coming in, you guys.
Thanks.
Coming up the 14th through the 16th. It's the 69th annual Golden North Salmon Derby. And more information, one more time, that web address.
It is goldennorthsalmonderby.com.
All right. And here is Garrison Keillor with Writer's Almanac.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Friday, the 31st of July, 2015. It's the birthday of the woman Teddy Roosevelt called the most dangerous woman in America, Mary Harris Jones, Mother Jones, born to a tenant farmer in Cork, Ireland, 1837. Her family fled the potato famine when she was just 10, settled in Toronto. She trained to be a teacher, took a job in Memphis, Tennessee, where on the eve of the Civil War, she married a union foundry worker and she started a family. But then, after the war, a yellow fever epidemic swept through the city. Her husband, all four of her children, died. She was 30 years old. She moved to Chicago. She built a successful dressmaking business, only to lose everything in the Great Chicago Fire of 1871. And that's when she got involved in the city's labor movement. She worked leading labor organizers. She co-founded the Industrial Workers of the World, the IWW, the Wobblies, traveled the country wherever there was a labor struggle. Mother Jones said, "I asked a man in prison once how he happened to be there, and he said he had stolen a pair of shoes. I said if he had stolen a railroad, he would be a U.S. senator." She was a passionate critic of child labor, and she organized a children's march from Philadelphia to the home of Theodore Roosevelt in Oyster Bay, New York, with banners reading, "We want to go to school and not the mines." At the age of 88, she published a first-person account of her time in the labor movement called The Autobiography of Mother Jones. She died at the age of 93. She is buried at a miners' cemetery in Mount Olive, Illinois. Mother Jones, who said, "Whatever the fight, don't be ladylike." It's the birthday of Primo Levi, born in Turin, Italy, 1919. He grew up when Mussolini was in power in Italy. He joined the movement for young fascists. While he was going to college, got a degree in industrial chemistry, but he couldn't get a job because he was Jewish. So he joined the partisan resistance. His group was taken prisoner by the Germans. They were transported to Auschwitz. When the camp was liberated by the Red Army almost a year later, Primo Levi was one of only 20 of 650 Italian Jews who had survived. He went to work back in Italy at a paint factory, but he worked on a book about his experience entitled Survival at Auschwitz. It came out in this country in 1958. He wrote more poetry, more memoirs, including The Periodic Table, which traced his family history using the chart of elements. Primo Levi, who was concerned with people's ability to remain passive in the face of injustice. Here's a poem for today by William Butler Yeats, "Never Give All the Heart." Never give all the heart, for love will hardly seem worth thinking of to passionate women if it seem certain, and they never dream that it fades out from kiss to kiss. For everything that's lovely is but a brief, dreamy, kind delight. Oh, never give the heart outright, for they, for all smooth lips can say, have given their hearts up to the play, and who could play it well enough if deaf and dumb and blind with love? He that made this knows all the cost, for he gave all his heart and lost. William Butler Yeats's Never Give All the Heart. That's the Writer's Almanac, supported by the Poetry Foundation, offering the weekly poetry podcast, Poetry Off the Shelf, featuring contemporary American poets, readings, reviews, and more. Subscriptions at poetryfoundation.org/poetrypodcast. And by the Mosaic Foundation of Rita and Peter Hayden, based in Ann Arbor, honoring the literary arts and the universe of great ideas. Produced by Joy Biles, assisted by Teresa Burgess, be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
Love, loss, laughter, dancing, and swords. The Talented Kids and Perseverance Theater's Star Program are ready for opening night. Support these young actors in the musical Thoroughly Modern Millie Jr. or in Shakespeare's Stars, a fun mashup of Shakespeare's greatest hits. Performances begin July 24th and run through August 1st on the main stage at Perseverance Theater. Tickets are available at Hearthside Books, The Jack, online at ptalaska.org, or by calling 463-TIXX.
Programming is supported by Alaska Graphics, showcasing businesses and organizations through on-screen advertising at Gross Alaska Movie Theaters, now including animation, video, and optional audio. Information on advertising on the big screen at akonscreen.com.
Back to the KTOO studios. Andy Klein with you for this Friday edition of A Juno Afternoon. And Craig Millard has joined me. He's the pianist with the band The Flustered Cluckers. And Craig, thanks for joining us.
Hi, how are you doing?
I'm doing great. And you guys are playing tonight at the Food Truck Fridays. And
yeah,
you say you've played
Jack.
It before, right?
Last year? We did it last year. And it was a lot of fun.
Cool. And what was your favorite part about it last year?
I don't know. It's like we have a pretty good lineup. We do some blues rock and we have some good cover songs. And so we did some good cover songs and we ended on a pretty high note, and I think we're going to go out with the same song.
Oh, cool. So. And it's a cool audience too, right? Cuz people just kind of come in, it's relaxed, they stop, they listen to some music for a while, they're getting food and you know, it's just like it's a pretty cool vibe.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. And even though the weather's not cooperating today to be too nice, you know, that's to be expected. You know, the being inside of Jack's always, it's a nice building. So
it's been a great, and the improvements that have been made recently in the Jack are awesome with the lighting and the curtains that kind of cover up some of the background light and all that stuff. It's been pretty cool venue.
Yeah, definitely.
Really versatile, right? You know,
yeah.
I've done so many events and been to so many events at the Jack, I can't even count them all anymore.
Yeah, from like wine tastings to cello recitals, right. You know, it's just everything.
Well, you were saying that you're the Flustered Cluckers. I'm waiting to mess up on that.
Yeah, I did come up with the name, so it's me to blame if you do.
FCC is going to throw me off the air here. But you're saying it's kind of a blues rock kind of.
Yeah, it's a blues rock band, and I was telling you earlier, I'm mostly a classical.
Yeah,
background.
That's what I was going to ask about. Yeah,
and you were talking about Dr. Tutenoff earlier, and I actually took a master class with him when I was 16, so that's 12 years ago. But yeah, although my background's been classical until about college time, I eventually got into blues and jazz. I did jazz band in high school. And the first band I was in was up in Fairbanks with Annie Bartholomew.
Oh, yeah.
And so that was when I really got into blues. And Sophie, she put this band together, and she's the front woman. And
now, did you come down and play keyboards once with Annie?
Yeah.
All right, that's where I know you from.
We did Rock the Vote once.
Rock the Vote. Yeah, that was good.
It was a lot of fun.
You guys sounded great.
Thank you.
All right.
Thank you.
Yeah. So what to you is like the transition between being someone who's kind of classically trained to then moving to, I would guess, a little more freeform style, right? I mean, the rules aren't quite as rigid in some ways, right? Or how?
Yeah, and I guess I made that transition mostly in high school. You know, I did jazz band, and I was so perturbed about not having all the notes on the page. You know, you get chords, or you maybe get, you know, a little lead sheet with a little ditty written out. And that's when I learned the blues scale. You know, Ken Geyer was the band teacher then, and he was really great. So, and then in college, I met a bunch of great musicians, and that's when I kind of went into the more freeform style. And, yeah, I really like it. We do a lot of solos and kind of impromptu breaks in the songs, and so it is a little bit more free-flowing as opposed to, you know, we're going to play the song mm-hmm. the same every time.
So do you do some covers and some originals, or all original, or?
It's mostly covers.
Yeah.
We got some old blues. We do St. James. That's an old blues song. I think I'm not sure who first recorded it. It might even be, you know, in the public domain that it's so old. But we do mostly blues covers. We do some April Smith covers and. I think we do some Stones covers, so we do some rock too.
Mm-hmm.
We do Seven Nation Army is a song that we cover, and that's a lot of fun.
Yeah, that's in every sports stadium in America now, right?
Yeah,
that chant.
Yeah, no kidding.
Right. So, who else is in the band?
So I mentioned Sophie Lager. She's the front woman, and she's the person to contact if you ever want to book us. And she's got a really great voice, and I think I've known her since it's got to be middle school. I think we both went to Zantakahini together. And, I came back after college and been living here, and she put something together. Alexi Painter is our bass player, and he does a lot of stuff around town, has a lot of projects that he works on. He's really an excellent bass player, and he's got this fantastic ear. You know, he can always tell if somebody's a little bit off, and he kind of keeps me in line. But we played in jazz band since we played in high school, and we've done it on and off for the last 12 years, I guess. And so it's always fun to play with him.
Yeah.
And the newest member of the band is our drummer, Darren Jekyll, and he's from the East Coast. He's a transplant, but he's been here about 4 years, and he has extra tufts, so he's earned his wings.
He's getting in there now. Yeah, 4 years. That's good.
That's pretty good.
Yeah, he's survived some falls. People always say it's the winters, but I think it's the falls.
Yeah.
It's the falls that get people.
Yeah.
Makes them run for the hills.
Yeah.
October, November is brutal here.
Yeah, the weather.
So how many different bands have you personally been in? Have you ever counted them up?
Let's see. I've done just kind of solo piano stuff. I was in the high school jazz band in Fairbanks. I was in the choir for a little bit. And I was in a band with Annie. And I've done music on the fly before, just kind of calming piano music at the airport.
Nice. It's always nice.
Yeah, and so that was a lot of fun, and now I'm with this band. And
what's the difference to you between band and playing solo?
So I feel like, you know, a band is a team effort, and so your band members can help pick you up if you're having a rough day. You know, it seems like a little bit less pressure, and when you're playing solo, it's just like, oh, you know, if I mess up here, you know, hopefully people don't notice, versus, you know, if you've got drums and a bassist and a singer, and I make a little flub on the piano, nobody's going to notice. You know, they're focused on the whole band, and I think we really help make each other stronger when we play together like that.
Have you ever hesitated playing publicly, playing in front of an audience? Has it ever been a thing that you felt like you didn't want to do? It seems like you've been kind of doing it for a long time.
Not really. My piano teacher, Sue Kazama, she'd always have yearly recitals. And so I think I got over that fear of, you know, performing and public speaking pretty young. And so, I always like to do it as a measure of, you know, where have I been in the last year, and I can have a performance, I can see, you know, where I've improved or where our band has improved. And so I really like doing performance, and I'm looking forward to playing tonight, definitely.
Yeah. Well, tonight you guys are on at 5:30. The actual Food Truck Friday starts in about 15 minutes, so you can go over there to the Jack, really drive over now. And if you're listening now, head on over there. But 5:30 tonight at the Jack, the Flustered Cluckers will be there. Craig Millard is the pianist with the band, and it's a four-piece band, is that right?
Yeah.
Good old solid four-piece band.
Yeah.
And go check them out. It's going to be happening. It's happening now, and these guys are going to be on. You got to get over there, I'm sure. Set up and make sure things are in place, right?
Yeah, got all my gear in my car.
All right, sounds good. Well, thanks so much for joining us.
Yeah.
Appreciate it, Craig. And check them out at the Food Truck Fridays. It's happening at 5:30. Right now, we're going to hear, going from the Flustered Cluckers, we're going right into Bird Note.
This is Bird Note. We're hearing the call of a red crossbill. Crossbills travel in a small flock in search of seeds from the cones of pines, spruces, and firs. How they obtain those seeds involves a curious adaptation of their bills. First, cross your fingers, like one does for good luck. Now, just like your fingertips, the long tips of the crossbill's upper and lower bill don't meet, but instead cross over each other. To feed, the bird first detaches a cone from a conifer and holds that cone parallel to the branch with its feet. The bird then bites between the scales of the cone and pries them apart by opening its carefully crafted bill. Holding the scales apart, the bird then dislodges the seed with its tongue. Red crossbills can be seen searching for cones on the tops of the trees, climbing around using their feet and bills in the manner of parrots. Learn more about crossbills at our website, birdnote.org. Writers for Bird Note include Francis Wood, Ellen Blackstone, Todd Peterson, and Bob Sundstrom. I'm Michael Stein.
For this station comes from the Treadwell Ice Arena, located at 105 Savico Road in Douglas. Treadwell Ice Arena is scheduled to reopen on Monday, August 10th, and will be hosting Rocky Mountain Hockey School in August and Kim Yore's Power Skating Hockey Clinic in September. More information at juno.org/parkrec/icerink.
Before They Make Me Run. Well, a 5K run is coming up on August 5th. It's the Southeast Alaska Land Trust. And Allison Gillum and Amanda Pilley are here with me. Thanks, you guys, for coming in. Appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
Yeah, thank
and,
you.
And tell me, first of all, a little bit about, before we get to the run itself, but a little bit about Southeast Alaska Land Trust.
Yeah,
what's
sure.
it all about?
Yeah, so the Southeast Alaska Land Trust is a private, nonprofit organization, and we've been around now for 20 years. We were founded in 1995. And our basic mission is to protect the important natural, recreational, and cultural landscapes throughout Southeast Alaska. And so the reason for this upcoming 5K is because we are, as an organization, trying to connect people with our conservation lands in the community.
I was going to say, like, okay, 5K run, great, and then Southeast Olathe Land Trust, like, that's a why are they putting on a 5K?
Right.
But I like the idea of, so you actually chose the spot that you're doing the run that has to do with some of the land that is
right.
set aside and is part of the land trust.
Right, exactly. So the run is going to be at the Airport Dyke Trail, and from that trail you can view several of our parcels that abut the refuge that we have protected. So that was kind of the choice behind where the race is. And so, yeah, the race is next Wednesday, August 5th. On-site registration is at 5 p.m., and then the race start is at 6 p.m. Pre-registration is $15, and race day registration is $20. And if you want to register before the race, you can go to our website. It's www.southeastalaskalandtrust.org.
Well, tell me a little bit about this, these different lands that are abutting up to the Mendenhall Wetlands Refuge area.
Right. It's actually a really interesting project we're working on. It's called our Accreted Lands Project. And basically what's been going on out there is the glacier used to be there on top of the wetlands. And since it has receded, there is a process called accretion happening where basically
glacial rebound.
So the land is lifting. And the refuge boundary is based on the mean high water line out there. So as the land is rising, the land is actually rising out of the refuge, and upland landowners can claim that land as their own. And we've been working with those landowners to buy up the accreted lands to eventually, we hope one day, put back into the refuge to preserve that boundary. So that's the project we're working on out there.
Oh, that's a really interesting that that Mother Nature is making land come out of.
It's pretty unique.
Yeah, it's right. That's a really unique.
A lot of places in the country, they're not making land anymore.
No, that's right.
No.
Yeah, right. So can tell me a little bit about some other big projects that are happening with the Land Trust. What are some other things you guys are working on? And then we can talk a little more about the run itself.
Yeah, so we're always working on projects. And we have several happening here in Juneau. And one focusing around Vanderbilt Creek, that area, working on protecting that salmon stream there. We do have projects throughout Southeast Alaska. We're going to be kind of doing a larger effort to focus on the Prince of Wales Island and doing some projects down there. And so it just it depends. We have to work with willing landowners, so that's the willing private landowners. So that can be a restriction in terms of who we can work with.
Yeah, but you end up dealing with people that are generous and feel like they have a stewardship over the land and want to keep it in perpetuity
right,
in its
exactly.
natural state.
Exactly.
Which I think that there's a lot of people like that in Alaska.
There are.
Seems like, yeah.
Right.
Well, the 5K run. So tell me, have you guys done a run before?
This is our first run.
We have not done a run before, no.
Yeah.
We're pretty excited about it. We've been doing a lot of new events this year in particular, which has been really great for us. But this is our first run, the Wild for Conservation 5K. We're having it, like Allison said, on the Airport Dyke Trail. It's going to be August 5th. We have a special component of this run, actually, which is also unique in that we're going to be doing a virtual run.
Okay. I like the idea of this. I don't have to actually exert, or I'm just in my living room running, or what's
not
going on?
Not quite. Not quite.
Well, you know, technically we probably wouldn't know if you were or not, but we wanted to give other runners the opportunity to participate in the race, even if they didn't live here or if they weren't going to be here on that day. So we actually have people signed up from all over the country who will be participating in the race.
Remotely,
right. Correct.
So we have people in Florida, New Jersey, Massachusetts, Brooklyn.
Are they wearing helmets and they're running around? No, or just they run the 5K at the same. They run 5K at the same time on some other trail or
kind
system
of,
or
yeah.
something. Is that what's going on?
It's all on the honor system. They will be
to a point monitored.
Yeah,
no.
To a point. They don't have to run on August 5th. They have any time between right now and we actually extended it to August 12th to do it. They go online. They register the same. They sign up for the virtual race, and we send them a bib. And they can run or walk their 5K at any time. So yeah, it's been great. We're asking that they send us some sort of proof that they did it, but it's not required.
Selfie or something.
Yeah,
photo, and we have a Facebook page set up for the race where they
cool.
can post that.
Yeah,
cool.
It's been really fun. Actually, it's been so far more successful than the on-site race, so we're really excited about it.
Yeah.
Come on,
yeah,
Juno.
For pre-registration.
Get with it, Juno. What's going on here? Can't let these Floridians beat us.
Right.
What is happening? Well, I love the idea of a virtual race. That's fun.
Yeah.
I want to take it further. I want it. You know, if you get one of your runners to wear a cam, right?
Yeah.
And then run it,
there
and
you
then
go.
You
I'll
replay
go.
That, and then the person who's running the virtual race can just put that up in front of their treadmill, and then they could run that. And then they're running the dike trail.
There
that
you
could
go.
Work.
That's
yeah.
an idea. Next year.
Yeah.
Oh, we gotta brainstorm this stuff somewhere. I love this idea. This is good. I love it. Well, boy, that's really cool. And you were saying that you guys are doing some other events. You have been doing other events too. What are the stuff you guys been up to?
Our last event was a watercolor workshop. We did it in partnership with the Canvas, and we held that workshop out at the Arboretum, the Jensen Olsen Arboretum. The Jensen Olsen Arboretum is actually the first property that we put into conservation, so that's why we did it out there, and it was a great...
And it's beautiful.
Beautiful, rainy, cool. typical Juneau day, and
yeah.
it was a lot of fun. We had... a lot of participants for that.
And actually, an upcoming event that's happening is Sunday, August 16th, I believe is the date. We're going to do a fly casting workshop in partnership with Trout Unlimited out at one of our newly acquired properties on Douglas Island that abuts the refuge as well. And the purpose of that property, it's a very small parcel, but the purpose is for fishing access to the refuge because there's a lot of private land there and not access for people.
And that's a really fun thing to do. You know, I mean, fly fishing seems like such a thing that's about being out there, really immersing yourself. And then,
exactly.
of course, the actual fishing runs depend on a healthy environment and then a healthy ecosystem
right.
and all that. So
exactly.
it seems like such a perfect tie-in.
Right.
That's going to be
yeah.
really cool as well. All right, so just details one more time on Southeast Alaska Land Trust 5K. What is it, the Wild for Conservation Run?
Wild
right.
for Conservation 5K.
5K, okay. It's happening August 5th. And just details
right.
again for how people can sign up and that sort of stuff.
So August 5th, it's going to be at the Airport Dike Trail, 5 p.m. registration day of, and then 6 p.m. race start. But you can pre-register, and if you pre-register, it's only $15, and day of is $20. And you can register at our website, www.southeastalaskalandtrust.org.
Oh, I just want to add that the first 50 people who register for the on-site race are going to receive a free pint glass with the commemorative race logo on it. So
I can get behind pint glass.
That's right.
I
just got them
that.
In. They're beautiful.
They're
all
beautiful,
right.
and they're going fast.
They're going quickly. All right. Well, terrific. So sign up. It's the Southeast Alaska Land Trust Wild for Conservation 5K Run. It's happening August 5th. And thanks you guys so much for coming in. Allison Gillum and Amanda Pilley, thanks so much for
Thank
both
you.
Of you coming in.
Thank
Appreciate
you.
It. Have a great run.
Yeah,
we will.
Virtually or in the real world.
Come join us.
I love
us.
It. Okay. That's it for a Juno afternoon today. This Friday, have a great weekend, everyone. Andy Klein with you. Thanks again for joining me, and talk to you next week.
This is KTOO Juno. We broadcast at 104.3 FM in downtown Juno and Douglas. We also rebroadcast on translators K276AF in the Mendenhall Valley and Auk Bay, K269AO in Lemon and Schweitzer Creeks.